woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
You talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning.
Hello and welcome back to Dice and Jacks. I'm Tom Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 975. NASDAQ Futures down 19. We slid down a little bit on the close yesterday, but a little bit. We're not that far from record highs. Like, we're right there. So it's not like, Ricky, I need a volume coming my way.
You need a who?
I need a volume coming my way.
Okay.
Jimmy was on the board yesterday. I don't know. He might have been using his toes. You never know with that guy. We have Professor Kevin.
Good morning.
How are you?
Oh, I'm hanging in there.
Hopefully you're doing better than that soon. Just hanging.
I'm hoping so, yes. I'm very much hoping so.
This hanging upside down like a bat is not all that good.
Well, I come out at night.
Oh.
I fly at night.
Well, that's open enough to test you for rabies. Bzz, bzz. Kind of interesting news all over the place, Kevin. I don't know really where I want to start. Actually, I wanted to talk a little bit to Lou. We're going to talk next Thursday a lot about what you've been sending us, and I didn't have a chance to go through all of it because I was going to ask you about it for everybody else's education as well. What exactly is going down with the Congress stuff and regarding the antitrust and the major league, the major conferences, and where did it all start?
Well, for starters, let's remember it's congressional committee hearings, so the chances of anything substantial coming of it are small. But there really are a couple of angles that are being pursued, and I don't remember which ones are which. Let's start with the major sports leagues, and their antitrust exemptions, and everybody has some degree of exemption, although baseball has like the maximum exemption.
What do you think like hockey or basketball or football has? I mean, they think they got it all, but I mean, what do you think they have?
Well, they have some they have some protections to act as a cartel.
I seem to recall, I honestly don't know about hockey or basketball.
They have all the clubs in the league have the ability to act in concert on certain things.
Because when the AFL combined with the NFL, wasn't that pretty much limited to marketing? It was a long time ago.
Well, they have all kinds of rules and bylaws, you know, and some of them have gotten challenged. I mean, this goes back to Al Davis and the Raiders and when they wanted to move, and he had to challenge in court because they would vote as all the league members would vote as to whether he would be allowed to move his team. Now, in a true competitive, in any other business, in the competitive market, they'd say, you can locate your business anywhere you want. People will come into the marketplace in the same business. People will go out. So they all have the right to determine who can join the club. The club, you know, to get membership in the major leagues, in the league, and so on. They have those rights, and they have some controls over movement of franchises. And
Kevin, do you think that's something they were granted, or they just took and nobody's challenged it?
There's probably a degree of both. But I'd have to go look. I haven't gone to look.
Yeah, I haven't looked either.
The NHL have it. Because remember, the NHL operates in two countries as well. So there's got to be some complicators there. So we deal with that. But what they're really looking at when it comes to those is they're looking at how they do television. And we've talked about this on the show a number of times about how, you know, they keep selling you different kinds of entertainment packages, and then except for this game, we're gonna take this and we're gonna throw it on Apple TV, or we're gonna take, so you can't see that unless you go get a subscription to Apple TV, and you can't see the next one unless you go get a subscription to Peacock Network or something like that. So they're being challenged on those levels, and just to say, if you have any kind of special protections, and waivers to act in non-competitive ways, which is really what they're doing, isn't it? That it's just a non-competitive behavior to say, we have this little cartel, and only people can join it if they. If we want it, if we allow it, and if they pay us a big chunk of change. So,
well, it's akin to you buying the right to have five beers every night at your local saloon, and then all of a sudden the next month, not on a Thursday. No, not on a Tuesday.
Well, not on a Thursday, yeah. Not on a Tuesday, and only, and you know what? I'm changing the list of beers that you can get in those five.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of bait and switch going on here, and I think they're just looking at it and saying, is this kind of behavior, should that be protected, in any way legally? And I would agree that the answer is no.
If you had to speculate, and again, this is neither one of us have the numbers, but if you had to speculate. With the Cubs, with this marquee channel where nobody has joined them, they're trying to get $20 a person for just the marquee out of Comcast next year. I think that goes off like a fart in church, but we'll see. I don't think you ever want to actually get to the point where you're making somebody pay up just for that. The idea is to get buried in the cable somewhere where you get your $10 a month or $5 a month. And the cable raises the general rate $5, where you're not the villain, but that's just me.
And you're included in the sports package,
right? But I mean, I see whenever somebody throws the marquee in, other than maybe, a Cub AAA game, which they had on last night, or some other. How long can you run Cub history?
Yeah, I had a AAA game on yesterday afternoon too.
Yeah, well, yeah, after they lost the other game.
No, I'm talking about the team.
What talking about who?
I'm talking about the major league team. They might as well be in AAA.
Yeah, well, I'm saying is that will play out. But if you had it off the top, if you had to guess, with all the stuff with Marquee, with all the employees and all the other stuff with the thing, you can't seem to get that. They didn't want another person there. They didn't want like the Sox or the Bulls or anybody. What do you suppose the difference is in profit between there and just going back to Channel 9 and Channel 9 pay you? I mean, I don't know if it's that much. Maybe it could be, but I don't know. I don't know. I mean,
I don't know what kind of rights fees they were getting, and I'm sure they hope to be able to promote some other things. I mean, they'll do some syndicated college basketball, some of those kinds of things.
Yeah. Well, obviously they're trying to do as much as they can for the other. Well, the Cubs are 3 hours.
Just to squeeze out some stuff on margin.
Well, the Cubs are 480 hours a year. You got to fill up the rest, right?
Yeah.
And, I guess what I'm saying is I would like to, where can we find this, Kevin? A couple of 3 years ago, how's that for a term? The Utah Jazz decided to go back on free TV and said that we're not doing the cable thing, we're going to build our fan base. I wonder if we can find somebody who's written something about what kind of a hit, if any, they've taken. In terms of advertising and stuff, because you and I have talked about this, and we're not pontificating because we don't know when the Cubs go on Apple, say, or the listenership I mean, I don't know any bar around here that gets the apple. They said, screw it. I've got three things here. I'm not buying a fourth. The listenership has to drop by 40%, would
hey,
be
Chief,
my guess.
Real quick, it says right here that they changed from RSN model to local over-the-air affiliates. That's what you're talking about, right?
Right.
It says it 50%.
They did 50% less?
It lost 50% of his revenue, yeah.
Okay. I mean, I wonder, that's a little high, but maybe the jazz weren't that popular. But I guess what I'm saying is the advertising goes down, has to go down 40%. What was the one that was on last year and you could barely get the stream? It was in Paramount Plus or something, some Cub game. And how do you make that up? Your advertisers must be going to pay half as much. How do you make that up is my question.
Well, I don't know how you do, unless it looks to me like one of the part of what they're doing is they're just offloading a lot of their revenue, and so I'd have to see the accounting behind it. I guess is what I'm trying to say, because I wouldn't necessarily trust that the accounting for it all is accurate too. The Cubs have an interest in pushing as much revenue off their books as they can, because and that's true of all major league teams, because that's part how they do their collective bargaining. So the less revenue that they have to show
as part of the group, yeah,
the union is to their advantage as a bargaining unit. So, I don't really trust anything that you will ever see on accounting. Plus, if it's privately held, we're not going to see public statements on it anyway.
Well, what do you think the chances are of somebody on this, whatever committee it is in Congress, be it a Republican or Democrat, wake up and say, wait a minute, this antitrust exemption for Major League Baseball was a Supreme Court decision. There was a horse bleep one back then. It says it's not interstate commerce. That's wrong. What do you think the chances are they reverse that because somebody wakes up?
Not interstate commerce, nor is it limited to the United States anymore.
Yeah, but it's not interstate commerce, so it's immune from the Sherman Act, according to the Supreme Court in 1920 something.
Well, somebody with standing would have to go in and file a suit to get the Supreme Court to overturn it.
Well, I would say that the Congress could remove it. I don't think they have to go back to the Supreme Court. I don't know. I don't.
The Supreme Court upheld that it wasn't interstate commerce, but did they uphold a challenge to the? And I don't know the answer to this. I'm asking it legitimately as a question.
I think they did. I think there was a challenge somewhere along the line.
They upheld a challenge to the Congress giving them the exemption.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that would. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense to anybody. It's kind of hard to justify. But I mean, it seems like, you know, I don't know where prices are going. I have my views about the tariffs and the Fed lowering rate and the money supply growing. I have a feeling that September, October, November might be interesting months. But I hope I'm wrong. I don't see how that's not the perfect storm for a CPI number. Or something along those lines, or people just looking around saying stuff's higher. Who knows if you ever get the right numbers anymore? Or if you ever did, or are you going to get them anymore? They're going. It seems like their view of the world. And Kevin, we've talked about this with all kinds of people. What view of the world is the proper one going forward? You talk to some younger people that seem to be doing okay, and they go, well, you think I'm doing okay, I'll never be able to afford a new car or a new house. I mean, what are you talking about? I mean, and then all of a sudden you've got some people that are paying absurd amounts of money for things. I mean, the Lakers, if you look at the numbers, and Kevin, you're probably right, there's probably off-books crap somewhere, they made $200 million last year, and they're one of the highest grossing teams, if not the highest in all of... Actually, I think the guys at San Francisco might be a little higher, but anyway, 200's high. A lot of people that are in the ones, a lot of people under the ones, and a couple of them have actually lost money, which is even more bizarre. Now, again, you're probably right that there's something off book there. But the fact is, nobody rational puts a $10 billion price on something where you're making $200 million a year. unless you have some incredible view of the future's, you know, the future's so bright we got to wear shades or something like that. And I don't, the disconnect, I think, between a lot of the population, and I mean, I see the Cub tickets up. I mean, the beers there are, what, $12? I see baseball, my know-it-all at the local bar tells me that, what's his name, the right fielder, Tucker, is a shoo-in for $40 million a year. And I'm sitting there going, boy, tale of two worlds, huh, Kevin? I mean, what is their view? There's always going to be enough people to stack Wrigley Field, even if we have a recession or a deep...
The in-person attendance is an example of scarcity. If in-person attendance is in demand and you're capped at about 40,000 seats in a metropolitan area as large as Chicago, yeah, you'll be able to fill the ballpark a lot, very often, unless your team really sucks, which we see with the White Sox, you know, that they do not do it, but they will if they get good. So, you know, there is a scarcity there that does allow for some fairly aggressive pricing. It may be short-sighted. Sometimes you have to look beyond what you can get this year.
I agree.
And say I still have to cultivate a fan base. Because if I let that dwindle, then I get out 10 years, and and nobody cares.
But how the example, Kevin, and you're a Chicago dude, so you, I think, are aware of this example. Is there's a very fine line between tickets very difficult to get, and all of a sudden I can get them. Notre Dame is somewhat of an example in that regard right now. The biggest example that I've ever seen was when the Blackhawks moved across the street from the old stadium to the United Center. The old stadium held 18,000 something and, what, 19 for hockey, because they put more people in than the fire code allowed them to have. And how they did that, I have no idea. But they did. And you could not get a ticket. I mean, it was one of the hardest tickets to get. Now I think the hardest ticket, last I heard, in North America to get is a Toronto Maple Leaf ticket, which I think is probably still true, or pretty close to true, because the Canadians love their hockey. And but now when the Hawks went across the street, the team got a little crummier, and all of a sudden the place holds 22,000 or whatever, and you can actually get a ticket. What did they go down to, Kevin? Like 7 or 8 for several years when they didn't have a decent team. And
And in truth, they got way crummier. So,
they got what?
They got way crummier, not a little crummier.
But you're.
They weren't good. Hockey doesn't have nearly the broad following that baseball and football do. It's got a core, and they got trendy when they were really good, when they won the 3 championships in 6 years or 7 years, whatever it was.
I'm talking about way before that. When Chelios and those guys are playing.
Back before that, there's not enough hardcore hockey support like there might be in baseball. So, you know, if you were to just look at I'm a fan of the sport type of things, and first I'm a fan of the sport, and then I can pick my team, I would say that when you're looking at 40,000 seats for Wrigley Field or 22,000 seats for hockey, It's more than a 2-to-1 that people are baseball fans. And then you start looking at the scarcity, the popularity of pro football, and the number of people. I'm just sort of, back of the napkin scratching out, what's going to be the demand based on size of the market, interest, a number of things. And hockey is, it's like soccer locally. You got a lot. You got a lot of kids who play soccer, but you don't have a lot of families and grown-ups who follow a soccer team at all. But you have some, and you have a very hardcore following, and you can sell to them. And so I guess what I'm saying is, you're not going to fill a 60,000 seat stadium for soccer unless you bring the World Cup to town or something like that, and everybody knows.
Well, it's funny we're talking about. I mean, we are stocks and jocks. This isn't exactly stocks, but it's economics, and it applies to across the board. And every business has like, I'll say, little nuances. Like, Kevin, I mean, in our lifetime, when Jack Brickhouse used to come on, you know, they had a walk up, to a large extent, a walk up neighborhood crowd, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he'd come on at, you know, for the leadoff man or whatever, and the game starts at 1:20, and with Lou Boudreau would come on at what, 12:45 to do the leadoff man or something. And the first thing they'd say is, come on out to the ballpark. It's a beautiful day. We got time. You'll be here to the first inning. You know, get on the bus, come on over, or get on the L. That nobody would even think of saying that today. I mean, if you don't sell the tickets in January, to a large extent, unless you got some kind of playoff run out of the blue or something, you don't sell them. And the interesting part about the White Sox is, as horse bleep as they've been, and as small as the crowds have been, if you walked over there today, Kevin, and said, boy, I'd like to get some season tickets, don't even think about a discount. And don't even think about dropping the beers from $12 to $7 like some other teams are. They'll have these specials. Like my guy Jimmy that was on the show yesterday, he and a few of his buddies go every once in a while on a Sunday, and there's a bar in the South Loop that has, for $20, you get a buffet, a bus, and a ticket. Now the ticket's up top. Well, that's a special. You can easily... So if you want to get to a Sox game cheap, you can look at the specials now, and you can find a night or a day, and you can get in if you want to watch a ball game. Don't even think that if you want to say, well, I want season tickets next year, nobody else seems to be here. They don't care. You'd swear they were World Series winners. So they have a, use the term, a very bifurcated market. I'm going to say at Cubs Park that 60% of the people there on any given day did not buy the ticket. Maybe that's a little high, because the bleacher people maybe did, and the upper deck. Everybody else, those are season tickets by somebody either. And I say, I mean, it could be a group. You and I split the tickets, and we're going to go to 15 games apiece. Now, we bought the ticket, but the people we sent didn't buy the ticket, the people we gave them to, right? So the idea, and I'm going to say, when you and I were kids and went to a game, 95% of the people bought the ticket? I mean, so they have to be careful of these trends. Not that I really give a crap whether they got any money or not, but it's something we report on, something we care about. You have to look at your market and say, what if it falls off just a little bit? And, you know, Wrigley Field is still a neighborhood place. You can get there easily. You can probably walk home, which is very unusual in some of this other stuff. But what do you think would have to happen? If you and I are sitting in a downtown bar in L.A. after work going, hey, let's go to the Dodger game. What are we talking? An hour in traffic? How much to park? We would never make that decision.
And isn't that what you're asking people, most people, to do now? Anybody who lives in suburbia is not likely to go to a game on the spur of the moment.
That's right.
I lived in Milwaukee, and that's not too long ago, but it's probably been 20 years. You know, I could decide to go to a game on the day of the game.
Yeah.
And you know, there I just go online, get some tickets. That was not hard. There were usually decent seats available, and then you know, because the travel burden in that city isn't so bad, I could actually go home from work, grab a bite to eat or not, or wait until I got to the ballpark. But I could change clothes and head over to the ballpark, and you know, stop pick up Bob on the way, and be in my seat by the first pitch.
Well, and
you can't do that in Chicago. You can't. You can't do it very well if you're coming from the South Side or the South Suburbs to see the White Sox. But if you have to navigate your way into the neighborhood for Wrigley Field, you just can't do it.
Well, I had I split Dan, Big Dan season tickets for, 15 years, Kevin, maybe 20. And if I'd give them to somebody from the floor, somebody asked me for tickets, I go, okay, here I go, here's the four. Because they weren't, you know, I wasn't going to charge anybody. These guys were brokers and stuff. Plus, they weren't that expensive. So it wasn't that much of a gift. And they were expensive if you couldn't give them away. Then you felt like crap. Hey, wait a minute, I just got $150 worth of tickets here and I can't give them away. But if you already paid for them in January, and I know this is economically crazy, you already paid for them, and somebody on the floor you like wanted to go, what would typically happen is if the person even lived in the burbs, they'd say, okay, next Friday I'll drive in, and my wife and two kids will hop the train. They'll meet me downtown. We'll go to the game and we'll drive home together. There was some planning to it. You know what I'm saying? You could do it. I mean, that was easy enough to do, you know, type of thing. But it wasn't something every single day. If you've got, you know, and I don't, and the train for a long time, the White Sox, and this is, we got to go to break, but the White Sox, Reinsdorf and his buddy Eddie Einhorn, in some ways were the dumbest people on earth when they got the team. They decided, Eddie Einhorn was Mr. Cable, right? Well, Sox went on cable, I'm going to say, 10 years
ago. They actually, because Chicago really hadn't built out cable, they were a laggard in that. They actually did that on TV thing where you had to...
I remember that, yeah. But they ended up going full cable.
Barely what it is now.
I'm going to say they went full cable 10 years before certain neighborhoods in the city were even wired. So they totally lost, except if you were, you know, somebody who lived in Bridgeport, they totally lost their Chicago crowd. And for a long time, the big White Sox fans were guys like Leo Breen, we knew, and Billy Hague. Those guys were all from the suburbs because their areas were all wired. So this, you would think that the Sox, since there's a railroads, big railroad thing right next to them, that they would have had a train. I happen to know about trains. That they would have had a train for the Burlington Northern after every game that would just started there and headed out to the burbs to take care of the people that came in on the Burlington. They never did, Kevin. They finally put an L stop there. But why? And plus another block away the other way is the Rock Island going south. You would think there had been a train after the game going south. Well, why don't we do stuff like that? I mean, I don't get it. That's an infrastructure improvement that would help everybody. Anyway, SP Futures up 10, NASDAQ Futures down 14. Come back.
I'm not right back. Draw Carl into the conversation.
Okay. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks. Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing. Address some growing concentration issues. Maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can, whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now.
Low and North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tamar Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 10, NASDAQ Futures down 13. Dow Futures up 295. Most of that has become United Health. Warren Buffett is rumored to take in a piece of that. Is up 30 bucks. So that's 210 to 240 points in the Dow. So remember, the Dow has I think it's seven is the multiplier. So if a stock's up a buck, it's seven in the average, which is a little weird, but that's the way it is, as they say. Over the DAX up 25.1%, FTSE up 9.1%, CAC around up 50.6%. So we're up in Europe, but not very much. Asia, Japanese markets close at record high. Second quarter GDP beats forecast. I think they're cheating on, just saying, they're probably cheating on their price deflator, but that's what we do now. Nikkei is up 729, 1.7%. Hang Seng down 249, that's a full 1%. Shanghai up 30.8%, which is kind of odd that the Hang Seng and the Shanghai are going the opposite directions here, but they are. Been happening some lately. A 30-year bond unchanged, 4.29. It's a nothing, but it's straight up this week. The Bund up, we actually went up yesterday. Went up on the CPI number, and it went up on the PPI number. The Bund up 4 basis points, 2.74. Oil, which has been getting clobbered, I mean, it's nowhere. Still nowhere. 63.38, down 58 cents. The only trade there is that the heating oil is running ahead of RBOB. So guys like Greg Pappas, who trade that, have been actually pretty busy and dodging bullets because it's really moved back and forth. It's called a crack spread. Gold up 240, 33.85, back under 3,400, but not very far. Silver down 19 cents, 37.87. We've got foreign exchange, and this is now the dollar is weakening here. The euro is almost back to 117, 1.169, and the pound is 135.6. So we were 117 something, went back down to almost 115, and now we're back up to the top. This 1.5-2% moves in currencies. Talk about with Kevin or Carl, whoever we get when we come back here. We'll talk about it because that's stuff flying around. Crypto up 830, 119.092. It dropped off the record, but now look, it's creeping back up there. Ricky, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, Cubs can't hit.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 6:35 here in Chicago. 70 degrees right now with a high of 89. Sun in areas of high clouds and warmer today. Tonight and partly cloudy with warm and humid weather. Low in 76 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 80 degrees right now with a high of 104. Partly sunny and very warm. A passing shower this morning followed by a thunderstorm in spots this afternoon. Followed tonight by a possible thunderstorm again, otherwise mainly clear with a low of 83 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, Kennedy from Monroe, 19 minutes. Edens from Lane Cook, 33 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 23 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 14 minutes. And lastly, inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 22 minutes. MLB, Cubs lose to Blue Jays 2-1 yesterday, and Diamondbacks beat Rockies 8-2. Today we got White Sox at Royals at 7:10 p.m., Pirates at Cubs at 1:20 p.m., and Diamondbacks at Rockies at 7:40 p.m. Lastly, NFL preseason week 2, this Saturday the 16th. Tomorrow we have Cardinals at Broncos, 8:30 p.m., and Sunday 17th, Bills at Bears at 7 p.m. Back to you guys.
We have Carl, we have Kevin.
We're both here, so.
All right, well, good.
How about the sequence in the Cubs game yesterday, eighth inning, top of the eighth, they're down 2-1, and they have second and third, nobody out.
And now, Kevin, you're going to ruin my day here because all I saw, I was tracing them on the online where he's telling you for innings, and the top of the eighth took forever, and I'm thinking I'm going to see this two or three runs come up, and I never did. Now, so what happened?
Well, it was second and third, and nobody out. So it's Hap, strikeout. Tucker, strikeout. And then just to twist the knife, even though you had to have a base hit, now all they had to do was put the ball in play, and they could have at least tied the game if not taken the lead. And then the third guy up was Kelly, and he struck out too. So they didn't even manage to put the ball in play with second and third and nobody out.
Did they swing at a strike anywhere in there?
I think they were mostly strikes. They were mostly pitches in the strike zone. I think Hap went out on a chase, but he swung and missed at other pitches too.
I don't understand how in my mind they're
fly ball. You know, just hit a damn fly ball.
They're a team of speed. When they all play together, they're pretty darn good. The minute they flop apart, they turn into last year. Are we swinging for the fence and they're not?
I don't even think they were swinging from the fence. I think they were just being pathetic.
Are they being pitched differently, you think, or what? I mean, obviously, look at the difference in batting average the first half of the year and now. It's like drop 100 points.
Don't know what to tell you. I will tell you this, though. I am pretty sure Owen Casey can do what Tucker's doing. So
yeah,
I'm not going to go spend $40 million signing him up next year.
I don't. Why can't somebody put a bunt down when you know you're in trouble?
Got me. Yeah, I mean, it's inexplicable that they are this bad, and that is just really, really bad baseball.
Well, you know, it's inexplicable that they don't recognize it, that they're in a slump and act accordingly.
You know, Chief, what's interesting is that with the double-A ball that we get here, okay, there are considerably more bunts than you see in the majors.
Well, that's because in the majors, nobody wants to bunt. Their agent will tell them don't bunt.
Well, in a fairly decent percentage of the time, they're actually bunt attempts for a hit. They're not sacrifices.
You know who was the great?
Yeah, and you know what? You see, you have the Cubs minor league, the Cubs double A team, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm here, you know, the South Bend Cubs are the triple or the single A team. So we've seen the same guys come up through the system. And actually, I don't know. I don't know how many of them you would consider part of the current team. I think there's some guys we're going to see over the next few years because I just look at the contracts that are expiring. So, you know, I think we'll see Moises Ballesteros replacing Suzuki. I think we will see Casey replacing, taking down the outfield job. But some of these guys that have been around a really long time, you know, it's just discouraging to watch them play baseball the way they are because it's just bad baseball.
Well, I was when we were young, we all were young at one time. I remember Brickhouse and Lou Boudreau saying that if you asked Ernie Banks to bunt, he prided himself on being a good bunter just in case that ever happened in a situation. Ever since those days, whenever you ask somebody who really wants to swing for the fence and whose agent tells him you got to get home runs, you ask him to bunt. It looks to me, you know, and I'm not, I don't know what's in their mind, but I get pretty good at body language, being a trading pit for 20 years. It looks to me like they try and embarrass the living bejesus out of themselves so nobody ever asks them to do it again. I think on purpose they screw it up. That's
well, it could be. There's a notion among the staff people that bunting is not the good percentage play, except in limited situations, because you should never give up an out on purpose. So that's part of why it doesn't get requested that often. Again, I think there are times, especially, you know, Madden, when he was the manager of the Cubs, used to love to squeeze.
That's the part of these stat. Oh God, I'm going on a limb here. These stat idiots that I can't handle, Kevin. Because if I bunt once a week and I'm out, okay, some stat guy is going to say, "Chief, you're a moron. What are you bunting for?" I might also say, the fact that I might bunt brings the third baseman in 6 feet from where he normally would be, and once or twice a week I can get to slap a ball by him. Stat guy is never going to pick that up, is he?
Well, yeah, that's the whole problem, is the fact that you might bunt brings that guy in 6 or 10 feet, and then you drop one right over his head.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, that's a double.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, and if there's somebody on second, he scores.
I'm going to ask you guys, you're sports dudes, I don't expect you to know the answer, who is, well, considered to be the greatest bunter in history? There's guys that are really good, like Nellie Fox and people like that for sacrifice and stuff. But I mean, just
I'm thinking of who I've seen that's the best.
You're never going to get it. So I'll tell you, according to this guy in Cora, Mickey Mantle. When he dragged one toward first base when he was younger and that fast, he got on base 60% of the time. He said if the dude, for his entire career, of course, when his knees got worse and his ankle and everything else, said if he'd have bunted once a week, he might have batted 400. If you added
60% is a hell of an on-base percentage.
Yeah. he might have waited for situations because when he was batting a lefty, the second baseman might have been God knows where. So if he got it by the pitcher, you and I could have got to first base. I'm sure it was in situations that didn't always show up. You know, so if he just would have gone up there and done it every time, I doubt very seriously if he did. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying about the stats. So, but the situations that he picked, he was 60% effective.
Yeah. So what's behind the stat movement is basically it's card counting. You know, you're just saying, you know, I'm not going to win every hand of blackjack, but if I'm a good card counter, I will beat the odds. And that's really what's behind the stats. But that, you know, but of course that's not how the game unfolds all the time. And so there is this intuitive part of it that can't go away. But also knowing that if you're really going to rely on card counting, then you're going to have a real problem when it comes to deviating from the plan, because when you deviate from the plan, you're going to lower your odds. It's really a strange mentality, and it's more prevalent in baseball because there's just so many games, so many, you know, that the laws of large numbers start to come into play. It's a weirdness to it. I think there's some value to it, but it does take a little of the intuition out, and some of the intuition is how you win games.
Well, you know who, Carl, you'll love this. You know who actually started a lot of this, the stat stuff, and you didn't the year I played on the dorm team, Kevin. You were a freshman. You didn't play when you were freshman year, or did you? Or maybe it was the year before you were a freshman. I'm not sure. But anyway, we played. It was the year Kirk Miller and those guys were. He was the quarterback. Were you on that team? Anyway,
I don't know what team, what sport.
Football.
I played when I was a freshman and sophomore.
So you played when we had the wishbone with McCauley and everybody was playing?
I played when we won the championship.
Okay, well, we didn't.
With four freshman defensive linemen who were holy
all
terrors.
Right. We didn't. We ended up, we had the big snowstorm, so we ended up playing, and we didn't get to play in the stadium, and one of their guys fumbled the end zone, and McCauley went to jump on it, and it skittered out from under his gut, and the other guys recovered it. There was a guy on our team named Fran Finnegan. And Fran, when you sit there and go, why the hell am I telling me this story? Well, Fran went to Notre Dame, Carl, you'll love this, as a computer major. And he was probably 2 years older than me. Well, the minute he got there, they dropped the major.
Oh.
So, but he kept plugging along. And he was a real sports fanatic, but he was a little guy. Matter of fact, he came in for one play and he broke his ankles. Ugh. But he was a nice guy. I mean, I wasn't a friend. He was older than me. But he kept going. And all every night you'd see him slugging down to the IBM thing with his big stack of punch cards, and, you know, that's how long ago it was.
Oh yeah, no, I know this stuff.
And he ended up putting something together where he thought that one of the biggest weaknesses in sports was in evaluating people. Now, Kevin and I played in a softball league for years where we knew every single person. We knew what they could do and what they couldn't do. I mean, that's just how into it we were. If somebody showed up for a new right fielder, that's the first place you hit the ball. I mean, you didn't need a stat geek. What Fran Finnegan, in those days, it was, you know, whoever was the head coach era knew a guy in California, and they go, oh, God, it's Kevin O'Neill's one hell of a defensive tackle, and by the way, and then maybe he'd get a film. But what Fran Finnegan did is said, you know what we need is, I think he had maybe 10 stats, maybe 15. It was 40 time, weight, how many, I don't know, it was push-ups. He had like 10 different things where you could actually compare two people you never saw. At least on, you know, a few statistics. And when he got out of school, he sold that for the then unheard of price of $20,000 to Hank Stram at the Chiefs. I don't know if you knew that or not, Kevin. And then within the next couple of years, about five other teams bought it. And I don't know whatever happened to him. I mean, I haven't heard the name, but he was like the original. And it's a way to compare one person to another that you never saw play. Right, Kevin? Because if you saw him play every day or played against him, you knew who is more dangerous in what situation, right? Because you look right at it. But if you didn't, if you're a gambler, how do we compare Stan Musial to somebody and somebody? Well, none of us saw him play. I might have seen Stan Musial when I was 5 years old or something, but, I mean, I don't remember. So you go through this incredible stat stuff, and how do I know the other team coming in? Well, this guy is X for something on fastballs. But then you got a guy like Billy Williams that would say, early in the game, if there's nobody on base, I would intentionally miss a ball I knew I could hit because later in the game I might need that pitch and he's going to give it to me again, I'm going to whack it. So, I mean, there's a lot more to it, I think, but it's the, I won't say the idiot's way, it's a way to start by looking at who's statistically better or worse in different stuff. Would you guys agree or not? It's a great arrow in the quiver. I would never not throw it out of the locker room, but you can't just go by it, can you?
Well, I think it's I think you know the problem. So I guess I would compare this, since you know we do markets around here too, right? Isn't this kind of like technical analysis in the stock market?
Well, technical is
because that fundamentally is a numerical thing.
I think it's more comparing PEs, those kinds of things, and comparing,
well,
you know.
Okay, yeah. Maybe. I just, you know, it's just because the thing about stats in you know trying to identify them is, okay, what's the important statistic or group of statistics that actually provide at the end of the season a delta in the number of wins, because that's what matters, right?
Yeah.
I mean, from the team's point of view, what you care about is how many games did you win versus how many did you lose. And so there's some things that sound instantly obvious. You know, percentage of time you reach base in baseball. Well, if you never get on base, how do you score runs?
Yeah, you can't steal. You can't steal first. You know.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, if you never get on base, how many runs do you score? Well, that's zero. So there are things that sound obvious, but the question is then, okay, we have this set of base statistics that are very obviously important. How do those get threaded together with other pieces of information? Because obviously, you know, I mean, the other thing goes along with that is that if your guy gets on base, but where you have him in the lineup, every time he does, there's two outs and he's the only man on. Okay. Well, you know, any caught fly ball and he's done, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's the thing, is that there's, you know, how do you link these things into something that actually makes a statistical difference in outcomes? Because that's what matters at the end of the game, right?
Well, you know, what's really interesting, and Kevin, maybe you'll, there's a massive difference, I think, and Kevin can confirm or kick me, between people's evaluation of a player in hardball or in softball, especially 16-inch. Now, you might say, why the hell is that? There was a guy wrote the article, wrote a question in a core about who is the better player, Stan Musial or Ted Williams, when most people would say Ted Williams, even though Musial was a way better outfielder and he was faster and other kinds of things. And the answer was, well, you have, in baseball, hitting really rules the day. So if somebody's a better hitter, unless they're like horrendous in the field and have no place to put them, which now you can be a DH, you're the better player. And I'm going to say, with my 16-inch softball experience, since people can move the ball around, you could only hide a hitter in a catcher spot. You could never hide somebody in the field. I mean, because especially me being a pitcher, if he was two errors a game, I don't care how many hits he got. I mean, you couldn't cover him. But in hardball, I think you sort of can. I mean, or at least in a lot of people's minds, you can. I mean, not that if you put me out there and I can't even catch a fly ball. But I'm saying the difference between an elite versus a pretty good right fielder where one guy's hitting 330 and the other guy's hitting 230, the choice is obvious. Where in softball, it might not be, right, Kevin? I mean, because you can hit the ball right to him.
Yeah, and I'll agree with you. What we're really kind of walking through is the data information knowledge, you know, continuum that really comes into play.
Yeah.
So you start with data, and you know data. You know, if you look at just basic raw data, until you start to organize it and slice it and dice it, ask questions about it, and so on, it's not very helpful by itself. We lived through that whole COVID nonsense, citing data without doing a lot of analysis. When I say we, not on this show. But if you looked at the daily news, for instance, it's what big scary number can I show you today?
Oh, yeah.
But there's no insight into what it means. Now, you know, an example is you say an out's an out, right? You know, and you can look at things pretty binary. I got a base hit, or I got an out, or made an out. Now they start to look at a lot of how hard did you hit the ball? How hard did you hit the balls that you put in play? So there's a lot of deeper dives into it. But more than that, I go back to what started this conversation. An out's an out unless Ian Happ can hit a fly ball, make an out hitting a fly ball and getting a run home. An out's an out unless he can hit a grounder that forces the second baseman to field the ball going towards the base and allowing the run to score from third base. So there's the concept of what's a productive out and what does that mean?
Right.
And so there's a whole lot of that. And so you get a lot of people who mindlessly cite statistics. But because I do so much teaching and working in the quality management world, we know better than that. We start learning how to use statistics, and it's really not just the raw data itself. It's how we organize it and how we ask questions about it and how we just start taking it apart that really gives you some insight into it. And I think that is often lacking in baseball discussions. It's often lacking in all kinds of discussions of important things and stock market discussions too.
I was just going to say, I was going to flip this over to all the ratios and all the stuff you get in stocks. And I maybe learned the hard way at an early age when I first started the floor, and the Dow was 800 and the interest rates were 15%. And I kind of correctly deduced that the interest rates really can't go any higher. There's only one way for them to go. And when they did, the stock market would go the other way, obviously, because the companies that were still in business were actually still making money. But the odd part that I didn't really beat myself up even more until maybe a year ago, I actually went back and looked at the rates. I started in, the rally was in August of 82, so I think I started in January of 81. And in that period of time, with my puny little account, and I traded on a brown badge and a crummy crowd, I tried to stay long, at least a little bit. And in the 18 months from the time the rates were 15.5 CD rates down to 12.5, the market went down another 20%. Instead of looking at this like I looked at it and said, this is so out of whack the other way, the market actually went down. And it's pretty similar to when we had our rates at 1% and now they're 4.5, say, and the market is up 30% or so. Yet, so I certainly lost. I might look at something and say, boy, this thing is like Palantir. I was talking the other day, they're $1.50 a year, $1.50 revenue, and it's trading 181. Well, I don't know. That's not a short today. It's not maybe a short next week. It may never be a short because maybe Palantir. All I can say is at that number, and I think Kyle would probably agree with me, at that number, something unusual has to happen to this stock in the next 3 or 4 years for it to grow into that number. Maybe they struck gold. Maybe who knows what they did. They're sitting on an oil well. Then all of a sudden, this revenue per share number is going to be $25 3 years from now. And that could very well happen. I don't know that much about it. All I'm saying is the current number. It's sort of like, you're talking about baseball, Kevin. The Cubs were, what percentage of their average with people in scoring position the first half of the year, and now it's gone exactly the opposite. What is it now, 100 or something? What I'm saying is the where the market is right now leads you to believe that something really, really good has to happen for these numbers to be justified. And they could very well be. And we could go another 2 years of nothing but a rally. So you can't. You can't necessarily look at the numbers in terms of, what it may cause me to, if I had a particular client in here who had a whole bunch of stocks and they were getting older, it may cause me to say, you need a little bit of protection or something in case this turns tomorrow because we don't know if it's going to turn, when it will. It may cause something like that, but you can't really make predictions on a short-term basis, even if you see the numbers going the other way, can you, Carl? Either way.
Well, no, and that's, it's interesting because, I've been pointing out now for several months that we've got this red flag that's been thrown in the labor report in the population-adjusted job number, okay? And this is an indicator that has only shown up twice before since I've been tracking it, which is 30 years, all right, and both times was in front of really bad economic dislocations that were not externalities. It showed up during COVID too, but of course that was an externality, okay? But it was in front of both the 2000 and the 2007 blowups, which, you know, of course, we all know those were bad, I think. So there's that. But then the other thing that's interesting is just the other day, I'm on Tom McClellan's mailing list. Okay, so I get, you know, he's a internal analysis guy looking in, and again, it's not a timing signal, but because it just isn't. But he's got a thing that he's followed for a very long period of time. That is essentially, where are you from a standpoint of the market versus M2. Okay, so you've got the S&P 500 versus M2. And you know, you and I and everybody else on the show, we talked about M2 as a substantially, the delta rate on that versus what you're seeing in the CPI, right?
Yeah.
Well, this is interesting because he has found that when that ratio goes over 0.2, you got trouble coming. All right. And interestingly enough, he's got data that goes back to the 1960s where he's been charting this thing. And again, it's not a timing indicator because this, we breached this in the, towards the end of the 1990s, and yet we went on for another 3 years, right? Before it all went kaboom. But kaboom.
By the way, if you're going to study it, you have to go back to the 60s because that's kind of when the whole thing started, 68.
Well, I get that, okay? But I mean, he's got data back to like 1959 on this chart that he sent out. And the other thing is that, again, we breached this substantially before the 2008 blow up. And so, so if you were, if you were shorting the market in 2006, you got your butt handed to you, right? Same thing. If you were trying to short things in 1997 or 1998, my God, let's short the Qs. Yeah, that's a really dumb idea.
Yeah.
Yes, you were right. However, you were also broke before you were right. But there's a couple of interesting things that came out that are in this chart, which I think are quite telling. One of them is that we had breached that threshold in 2019 before the COVID thing happened. All right. And there was probably, absent the crazy crap that they did with, throwing checks at everybody in 2000, that correction probably would have cleaned out most of the mess. All right. If they hadn't done that, if they'd said, well, if you stay, states that want to shut down, you shut down. States that don't, you don't. We're not extending unemployment. We're not going to send out, multiple rounds of $1,200 checks to people. Hey, sucks to be you if you have nothing. Maybe you should have done a little saving and had a little rainy day fund, because we know that nobody ever does that anymore, but it would have been a good idea. And by the way, they could have started yelling about that like in 2017 when this thing went over that 0.2 ratio, but of course nobody did. And so now here we sit as we go into this, and we're now basically in the same place we were right as this thing topped in 2000, right before it exploded in everyone's face.
We're probably at the same spot we are in. We're in 29.
Yeah, so here we are in the same, this table, and again, as he points out, this is not a timing indicator because, all you have to do is look at it. You say, well, damn, you sat on this thing trying to short the market into this thing for 2 years in the late 1990s before it blew up in your face.
Well, issues, I think, in it.
Here's the interesting thing. You know what he draws as the correlation from it, though, Chief? He says, where this ultimately he believes the reason this ultimately blows up is the margin debt.
Without a doubt. And
it's,
without a doubt.
And it's the margin clerk that ultimately blows it up.
It if the only reason why the tulips blew up is they allowed people to start borrowing against them to buy new ones.
Yeah, I just think it's interesting that, you know, here's a, you know, here's another uncorrelated data set that is, I mean, that obviously has absolutely nothing to do with the labor numbers, right? This is just a pure financial ratio. It has nothing to do with the labor numbers.
Well, it,
and yet, here we are again.
But some of these policies, one of the most amazing things, well, there's all kinds of amazing things in world history, but you have to wonder, every time one of these things happens, some people make out like bandits and most people don't.
Right. Most people get screwed.
Yeah. And if you go back to, again, I'm not expecting all the listeners to know the history of the Weimar Republic, although it's something people should really look at because it essentially gave us Adolf Hitler. And,
yeah.
it gave us how many bazillion people died, you know, my uncle being one of them.
You know what, Chief? You got no one who agrees with you more than on that than I.
But, okay. but you look at it and you say, how could anybody have been so dumb as to put all this money in the system and eviscerate your population and eventually had to get rid of that currency and come up with a new one? And
do you know why? Because they don't think their heads are going to be the ones that get cut
off.
Well,
okay, but I think you know this. I don't know if Kevin's still with us. I think he is.
He just dropped off.
I think you know this, that the German government, the Weimar Republic, declared it a full success.
Right.
Because what they did is they had to pay reparations to Britain and France, and they basically destroyed their currency to the point where, okay, here's your payment, but it wasn't worth anything.
Right. It was imposed on them by an outside force. And of course, now that came about as a result of
but also
one, but yes.
Also, and I'm gonna make it. I'm not going to make the reference to the person in the White House, but you can if you want or not. Landowners, especially big farmers, anybody who had debt in Germany made out like a bandit. Because guess what? The price of wheat went up 10 times. What happened to your mortgage? You walk down to the bank 6 months later and you go, here's your mortgage. And the guy
here's
goes,
your mortgage money, right?
Yeah, here's your mortgage money.
Well, here's the problem with that, though, Chief. Yes, that is true. That did happen. And then 2 years later, you get shot.
Well, maybe. But I'm saying...
I'm just saying that it's, you know, the idea, and especially... And one of the things that's obviously different is the world has changed, okay? Now you don't get shot. Now you get turned into an expanding ball of gas at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Well, okay, but where I'm going with this is that we like to think on the show, in our lifetime, as much as you may have not liked this president or that president or this congressman, you like to think that as soon as, and, you know, and everybody vilifies Jimmy Carter for, you know, but when Jimmy Carter was in office...
Well, I used to when I was young and stupid.
Well, okay, but when Jimmy Carter was in office... His people came to him and they said, "Now, most of the, you know, the rights will tell you that Reagan stopped all this, and that, by the way, you know, Volcker was his nominee. Nothing could be further from the truth." His people came to him. Now, Carter made a politically dumb decision. He came to him and said, "We got to corral this money supply. We've got to essentially put the place into somewhat of a recession," which, you know. If he didn't do it as jackbooted as Volcker, maybe he could have done it better. But we got to put us into recession. Do you want to do it after the election or now? And Jimmy Carter, I guess, I think he was a pretty honest man. He said, if I wait a year before I do it, is the economy going to be in worse shape or better? And the answer was, it will be in worse shape. If you want to do the best thing, you should do it right now. So Jimmy Carter did. We went into recession, and we ended up with Ronald Reagan, who, for the first 4 years, all the bad numbers, the worst numbers, were in his 2 to 4 years. So Jimmy Carter. But now, you're asking yourself, okay, who's going to be the biggest beneficiary of inflation? Well, now it's rich people that own stocks. We have a president who is absolutely dealing for himself outside of the White House. He's making deals with companies to buy them with government money. Now, who knows?
This thing I heard about Intel last night.
It's enough to make you vomit. But I'm saying now, I'm gonna say that if you know, I don't know what his numbers are with his places, but all I'm gonna say is if you bought the Doral and the room rates are 250, and all of a sudden inflation gets them to 450. I'm going to say that your mortgage payment for the Doral is a lot easier to take care of. There's people that benefit by this and people who don't.
And yeah, but there's a problem with attempting to do that as an engineering exercise.
I'm with you. But what I'm saying is, do we have a government, left or right, and I'm not saying, boy, I'm sure as hell not saying the Democrats are pure on this. Do we have a government, left or right, that's going to look at it and say, wow, it's really benefiting me, but it's screwing everybody else. We got to stop this. I don't think we have those people around. And I don't think it's not like if we get rid of him, we got some chaste and pure Democrat that's going to come flying in here and do the thing right. I mean, I don't see people who look beyond their own nose at all here. Do you?
No. And you know, so like one of the things that we were discussing on the list over the last few days is, you know, how does this kind of crap, like what's going on CMS and, you know, the MTS that just came out for this last month, which by the way
how did that number get so bad with all the tariff money coming in?
Well, the tariff okay, so this is called exponents, it's called arithmetic, all right? It's
but the expenditures are huge compared to last year.
Chief, you're not supposed to be able to get out of high school without understanding exponents, okay? Compound growth, which is what everyone in the market, including you, preaches as the, you know, the Larry Kudlow, compound growth is the best past president, you know, the magic of compounding. Well, guess what? It works on both sides. Compound growth also works on debt.
Did you just compare me to Larry Kudlow?
That was probably unfair.
Did I ever say the greatest story never told, the Goldilocks economy, and things fall apart?
I also don't think you stuffed, you know, bags of coke up your nose for, you know, on an admitted basis for a long period.
A couple of the guys in the trading floor were in the tank, and they were in there with Kudlow.
Yeah, well,
he was a gram a day guy, supposedly.
I heard, you know, I mean, who knows what the reality? Right? Anyway, the thing is that my issue with this is that I go back to this and I look at it and I say, you know, I called this pattern in the 1990s. And the reason that I got interested enough to try to figure out where in the hell it was coming from was that we were taking double-digit increases in our health insurance premiums that I had to pay as an employer for the people on my floor. All right. And I'm like, how in the hell does this make any sense? You know, what's driving this? Because private sector healthcare is, of course, you know, part of it, but that's not enough by itself. And oh, by the way, that obviously, I mean, if it had continued, if I hadn't sold the company, if I'd continued to run it, at some point it was going to bankrupt me. When you're taking, you know, 15% increases on a compounded growth rate per year in an operating expense.
Well, what you tried to do, even though you don't want to do it.
Well, you have to find a way to kill that, right? And what you're going to end up doing is screwing the employees.
Well, what we ended up doing, and let's just say, my brother's the most generous man that ever walked, and one of the best people you can ever talk to it, and regarding your portfolio. But what he would do, we ended up probably at 10, 12 people at the time, maybe more, which is a lot for a firm when everybody's, you know, pretty good at what they do. We ended up doing we did a base. Actually, we went with Empower, and what they allowed us to do is we bought the base thing plus a few other things, and if you wanted the dental, you had to pony up $20 a month or something. That kind of thing. So, you know, which isn't to say if somebody would have spent, you know, $3,000 on their teeth, we wouldn't have helped them out. But I mean, I didn't really want to pay for people's teeth cleaning. I mean, go and pay for it, for God's sake. But I'm saying we ended up having pieces. If you wanted the fall on a sidewalk insurance or something, you had to pay for that. We used to cover all that. So we ended up pulling a little bit of that out. So it was, even though we were probably going up 12% a year, if it would have been apples to apples, it might have been 15, right?
Oh yeah, no. Yeah. I mean, we had to deal with this all the time, right? I mean, this was like an annual thing for me to try to mitigate it to some extent. But I saw where it was going, and I'm digging through all the, and this is where I started tracking the stuff in the MTS, and I looked at this and said, "Oh God, all right," because between Medicare and Medicaid, at the time it was still a significant part of the budget. But it was, but generally speaking, it was under control, and for the most part, while there was still a very large operating deficit in CMS, because Medicaid is a pure welfare program, doesn't have an offsetting tax receipt. Medicare does,
yeah,
but Medicaid does not. And so, but I saw the percentage change, and then I just sat down and I'm like, hey, wait a minute, what if I extrapolate that out over 20 or 30 years, and I'm like, oh crap, in 2025, 2026, this detonates the federal budget, we end up with operating deficits in the 30-40% range, and the whole world ends. So I had that date on it, like now, 30 years ago. Now, you would think that given that this is public data, it's not, I didn't have inside baseball on this thing, and that both political parties, of course, can see this too, that everybody else can see this, that Treasury can see this, Bessent can see this, Yellen, everybody, all the way down the line, Geithner, that somebody would have said, you stop this or we all die. And we have to fix it. It's not, this is not something we can defer to tomorrow. This is a compound growth function. Cut it out or else. Well, the reason it hasn't been done, I'm convinced, is the same reason that Obama did DACA.
Why did you, on the same note, knowing we were going to talk about this today and we talked about it on Tuesday,
yeah,
what did you think of Wayne and Andrew's assessment of how deep these guys into Congress yesterday?
Oh, absolutely. But here's the thing. When you get down to it, when you boil it all down, because I got into it with some of the people in my forum in the comment section, including one guy who's, it's all these guys that are behind the, behind the curtain. It's these financiers, and of course, the undercurrent in there somewhere, because the Rothschilds come to it, it's the Jews, okay? And, I mean, he didn't say that, but, it's where he was going, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's that or it's, the money people, right? Whether you put the J label on or not, doesn't really matter. And I said, no, this is absolutely not true. And it, just like with all of these other things that go on in the country, it's not true. And the reason it's not true is that Congress has the power of the purse and must pass an appropriation for every single thing that goes on.
So if Trump writes a $2 billion check to Intel, where does he get that dough?
Well, the point is, he can't get the dough unless Congress gave it to him somewhere.
Or, all right? Or he's doing it on his own from his people around him raising it and becoming a
If he does it with his private money, then it's in, then it's improper influence peddling, but he's not spending your cash. Okay,
let me ask you, stay on the same tone, but let me ask you a question. We've got, when people say, look at all these people in Congress, this, that, and the other thing, well, and I'm with you on that, we're not, this is a not disagree, Chief and Carl Day. I have, since I do the show, and since I'm kind of inquisitive to start with, and I want to bring something to the table for you guys, because you guys always bring something to the table for me, I try and be as observant as I can. Even last night, we're sitting outside at the Sears Cafe, and it's a beautiful night, and not humid, and I'm watching people walk to the train.
Yeah.
I don't think 1 out of 10 looked healthy to me.
Yeah.
And I... There was a time...
Chief, it's the same problem here, right?
What I'm going with this is that there was a time... Well, let me get back to the Congress part. I don't know what a senator does all day. They're in, like, the lofty world, but I do know that the guys like Mike Quigley, whether you love him or don't love him, the guy's sending me stuff every week. He's somewhat involved. I think he still has an office, on a regular street. people aren't afraid to walk in his office, or certainly not afraid to send him a letter and give him some crap. Those guys, somewhere along the line, the concept of this preventative medicine, which was huge a few years ago, I see people in the building, their friends, people who come maybe work on my house once in a while, they've totally opted out of the whole medical thing whatsoever, unless they're dying. I mean, and I, you know, Karen Reeves, who was on the show.
Which, by the way, they'll probably live longer doing that.
Well, maybe, but I'm saying, Karen Reeves, when she during COVID, she came back on, and I really wish she'd have been in Congress, because I thought the world of her, and still do. She said her mother-in-law, I don't know, who knows what happened to the husband, I didn't ask, but she still takes care of her mother-in-law. I'm guessing the husband, the long-ago husband, does not. Well, anyway, during COVID, she feels like a lump in her breast or something. Can't get in to see anybody, 2 years later, it's stage four. Well, then they do some, I'm sure they probably did some kind of chemo and some kind of this. I'll bet there was a $150,000 tab there someplace.
Oh, yeah.
Where if she'd have gone on day one, it might have been a lumpectomy for God knows what, way a hell of a lot less, and she might have been fine. Maybe not, you know, I'm not a doctor, but somehow or another, we're shooting ourselves in the foot every which way we can on this, to me. It's not just what you're talking about, not the expenses. We're not getting anything for it.
Well, that's the problem, is the bad crowds out the good when you allow the fraud to go. Okay, so I mean, this is, and as I have pointed out many times, and it's not just in the healthcare area, it's everywhere else too. It's just the reality of it. You create a system that is designed and rewards criminality. And it's always easy, and the reason you end up doing that, even though that may not have been your intent, okay, but that's what you end up doing when you do this. And the reason is it's always easier to steal than create. Always. There are no exceptions to that rule. It's hard to actually create, to actually make something. Okay, you take a look at what, you know, you know what my opinion was on these mRNA-based shots.
Oh, yeah. And you had good reason to think,
well,
to think that way.
I had very good reason, because I'd followed the biotech company field that had been trying to use these things for cancer for a decade.
Was that what Avastin was? Was that one of those things?
No. But Moderna had been running multiple trials to try to use this stuff as a cancer treatment. All right. And I mean, the concept sounds really good, right? You get something into the cell. The cell produces a thing. The thing attacks the cancer. And by the way, if you can target it so that it only goes into the cells that are cancerous, no, boy, does that sound good, right?
I mean, well, yeah.
It leaves all the cells that are not cancer alone, and it kills all the ones that are. That's fabulous.
Well, if you can have something that lights that cell up.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'm just saying, there's, you know, this, that's the holy grail of, you know, trying to solve the problem, right? Well, these guys have been at this for a decade with this technology, and every time they ran into problems with dose response because they couldn't control how long this thing stayed in the body, how much it produced once it got into the body. Even when they got the targeting sort of kind of working, the toxicity got you. And they kept having to, you know, say, oh, well, that didn't work. You know, but it wasn't because the response to the drug didn't work. It was that they couldn't control the output side, because everybody's body's different. And there was no way, they never fixed this. And then all of a sudden, oh, we have this answer. Well, guess what? Now we got people who, you have actual physicians running actual tests, and because the shots use a thing called pseudouridine, which is a synthetic form of an amino acid called uridine, which doesn't exist in nature. So if you find that in somebody, you know where it came from. It could only have come from one place. Can't have come from getting COVID. It can't have come from anything else. It came from the shots. And you got physicians now that are finding it in people's bodies 3 years after they took them, which means that not only did it not stop.
So it's sort of like mercury, never leaves.
Well, it's worse, because it means that your body is still making the stuff. All right, which is, I mean, oh God. All right, now, you know, is that going to nail you? Who the hell knows? But That is exactly the kind of problem that they had with this.
It probably won't nail you, but it'll probably mean it's something that's supposed to work doesn't.
Well, no, it might nail you because that is exactly the kind of process that produces abnormal cells and then gives you cancer. All right, so I mean, this is very, very bad. And
by the way, you sent me that what do you want to call it? The video of the Asian dude from UCLA talking about. Is he had that was probably at least a year ago. Has there been a follow up to that?
He's an interesting dude. He's buying a newspaper. Was it Los Angeles Times? I think he's buying a paper out there. He had the NIH and everybody else that basically blocked his ability to get the equipment and the precursors necessary to make this therapy at scale.
On the video, it didn't say anything about a therapy. He just was talking about the problem.
No, he has figured out, at least, as a prophylaxis. Now, whether it works in people, he believes.
All right, what's a prophylaxis for everybody?
Well, okay, prophylaxis is like a condom. You put on a condom because you don't want someone to get pregnant or you don't want a disease. Okay, so he shot himself and his family up with this stuff when COVID showed up. And he says in that interview that I saw that basically that was the answer to the issue. In that, well, you know, certainly he was exposed. Everybody at this point, everyone's been exposed, right? But he never got it. And by the way, he's antibody negative. So not only did he not get it, but he's got T cell response. He's got durable T cell response, which is what you want to happen. When you induce immunity to something, it's the reason that a measles shot is probably 100% effective because it gets into your marrow. The T cell reactivity gets into your bone marrow. So it constantly gets replenished because your marrow is constantly replenishing your blood supply. And that is, that's the gold standard for immunity. All right. And interestingly enough, this is, but he wanted to produce this stuff because apparently it also works against cancer in many cases, not all cancers, but many cases. And he had the Fauciites essentially prevented him from getting the equipment and the precursors necessary to make the stuff in size. So he has small amounts of it available, and he's actually, from what I understand, he's got a clinic out in California. So, I mean, if you're getting screwed by one of the cancers that, this might work against, provided, you can pay for it, because, that's how it works, right? In theory, you should be able to go out there and, get stabbed a couple of times, and maybe it works and maybe it doesn't. He says that there's been a significant number of people that have essentially been beyond hope that have had complete responses.
We're going to go to break here in a little bit, but I want... We come back, let's talk about the PPI number and some of the stuff. But, without bringing it up, I watched a little bit of the Gavin Newsom thing, him speaking yesterday. But did you see the picture of the outside?
Oh, yeah.
What did you think of the stormtroopers?
My take on this is that the entire game right now is all optics. Newsom and his supposed response to Texas is the stupidest thing I've ever heard because California's already gerrymandered beyond all recognition. I mean, they're 40% GOP.
All right, take off your Republican hat.
Look, Chief, I lived in Illinois, okay, which is gerrymandered worse. All right, and hell, Connecticut has zero.
All right, my GOP reps. I'm not.
All I'm saying is they already squeezed this apple.
I'm talking about the.
Did
you see the outside?
Yes.
With the people standing, the automatic weapons and the masks.
Well, and they were.
Is that the Gestapo? What is that?
Chief, they're not automatic weapons. They're the same weapons that your police.
They were rifles.
Have in the back of the car.
They weren't in the back of the car.
Well, okay. If I've got. People that are felons, which is who they were out there to arrest.
We'll have to go to break.
I saw a guy with his hands behind his back and cuffs. All right,
so
that they were marching.
I guarantee you that they had to find somebody to arrest. That's not why they were there. They were there to show the new president's secret police force. How far does it have to go before you give me a kudo on this?
Chief, look.
When's the last time you saw a policeman with a mask on?
When was the last time that I was that we had policemen being doxxed and their home addresses published because somebody wanted someone to burn their house down?
Now these people can show up anywhere, a Bears game or someplace, just in the unlikely event some criminal guy who doesn't belong here walks by.
Hang on a minute, Chief. How many murders in Washington, D.C. are acceptable?
I'm saying you're not at least bit concerned about...
Yes, I am very concerned about the entire premise. I'm very concerned about the idea that for the last 20 years, we have had on both sides of the aisle, we have had as the tactic that is used politically to flood the zone with rank criminality, felonies.
So this is
the whole reason that they do it is because if you do it with enough people, the economic impact from fixing it is so large that no one will tolerate.
How does somebody disband this force for your scenario?
By the way, it's the same force that's existed for the last 1950s.
What are you talking about? You don't listen to the same radio I do. They're giving $50,000 bonuses and paying off student loans for guys to join the secret police.
They're not called the secret police. They're called ICE.
What's the difference?
Customs Enforcement. What's the difference? The difference is that Customs Enforcement has been around since we've had customs.
They're going to be used for anything intimidation anybody wants. In the end, it's genius, actually. Wherever you go, there's liable to be somebody there illegally or live here.
You know what, Chief? Do you realize that all the way back to 9/11, okay, all the way back to 9/11, 100 miles from the border, you could be 100 miles from the border, and an ICE agent can pull you over in your car and search your car. That's been the case for the last 25 years.
All right, I just saw the picture of the, you know, they look like somebody out of Star Wars, one of the stormtroopers.
Well, guess what? So did the guys that were standing at the thing. You know, you ever travel outside the United States?
I did a few times. I didn't like it so much.
Okay, well, guess what? I went to Japan, right? First world country. Nice place.
Do we want
to
be right? them?
I went there on business.
Right.
Do you know what was in the airport at Narita when I went through the customs desk? There was a dude with a slung automatic rifle with a magazine in it.
You wouldn't believe what happened. I'll tell this quick story. I got one better than you here, by the way. We went to Amsterdam drove to Denmark for a wedding and drove back, which is idiotic, but we did. We go to the, I had heard, you know, I'm not a big duty-free guy, but I'd never been to a duty-free thing. This is, what year are we talking about? 1988. And so this is when guys were, before the mole man was in charge of a country, he was hijacking people. Remember back then? Well, so evidently we were on TWA. Evidently TWA was the choice airline to hijack.
Yeah, right? they seem to get hijacked
more than anybody else. So
I remember that.
So we go to this is a true story. We're going to break soon. I always tell true stories. So we decide, okay, let's get to the airport like 2 hours early,
right?
So I could, you know, dive through the duty free for it. They supposedly had the best one in the world in the Amsterdam airport.
Oh, okay.
So I give the guy or whoever it was my. We all give the guy our briefcase or our suitcase.
Right.
Okay, you can go down there and claim them.
Right.
What do you mean you go down and claim them? Don't I claim them in New York? No.
No.
So you got to go down and open up your suitcase.
Right.
And one of the guys that's with us, Bobby Bades, young kid. Boy, I taught him how to trade and so forth. Nice, really nice guy. But he had this big, big, strong kid. But whenever you at least even touched on a nerve, the dude's face would get all red like he was guilty. He blushed no matter what. So the night before, we're in this bar, imagine that. And over there, people take their glasses in the bar very seriously. I mean, if you get a Bock beer, it's got to go in a certain shape glass.
Oh, yeah, there's the
skinny ones that come up. Those are Pilsner glasses. But they all had this really nice gold edge on the top. They're beautiful. So, right. So Bob says to the guy, hey, you know, do you mind if I'd really like to buy a few of these glasses?
Right.
They go, sure, we get them from the company. So he paid, you know, $2 a glass. The guy wraps them up for him, and now they're in his suitcase.
Uh-oh.
And then the guy next to him is a World War One knucklehead, and he's got a couple of, like, shells that he found on one of the battlefields, but they're empty. There's nothing in them.
They're empty. So it's just metal.
It's just metal. So the guy's giving him no end of crap. So he starts talking to Bob, and he goes, okay, where'd you get these glasses? Now, we're looking for terrorists, and me, being the idiot that I am, I said, hey, buddy, I was with him at the bar last night, and he bought them from the bartender. The guy looked at me. Now, these people, so then we had to go up into a waiting room.
Uh-huh.
And never got to the duty free.
By the way, you get the secondary screening for that.
Oh, yeah. So then there's a lady whose kid's got to go take a pee. Yeah. She goes, can I go to the ladies' room with my daughter? She goes, yeah. I'll go with you, with the AK-47.
With the AK-47.
And escorts her to the ladies' room. They might have been so afraid they couldn't pee. Maybe I don't know if I could. I've seen this happen. But the point is, I don't want to be those places.
You know, I get it, Chief, and the thing is, I don't want to be those places either. Now let's throw all the 20 million that are here out, and then we don't have to be it anymore.
Well, I mean, this is expanded from somebody who bolted over the border. By the way, we didn't even know they came across because we didn't catch them, because that's why they're here. We have an estimate of how many of these quote nefarious people are here. And they're doing drug stuff. And oh, by the way, they're doing drug stuff with the people who are already here, but we don't never catch them either, right? So now we have, pick a number, a couple hundred thousand people we actually don't want to have here. By the way, we got a couple hundred thousand maybe every city we don't want to have here either. They were born here. So now it's edged up to where the Polish cleaning lady who's been here for 19 years and has been paying her Social Security, and somehow or another, there's barriers to her to becoming a citizen, which I don't quite get. Now all of a sudden she's the enemy too. It's grown from stage A, which I agree with you, to all of a sudden to stage B and C, to the Mexican guy's wife who never got her citizenship, and by the way, she has 5 kids and has been here 30 years. Somehow she's the enemy too. It's grown to that, and I'm absolutely appalled at that. So
I'm not.
I know you aren't, and that's a big disagreement. I don't know why it's so difficult for these people to get their citizenship when they're here. They're paying taxes.
Because they deliberately don't.
But the process is dramatically hard.
Chief,
we're way over break.
Yeah,
but,
all right.
SP futures up 7. NASDAQ futures down 19. Intel was up a bunch, and now it's not. I mean, it was up $2.50.
I see that.
And now it's only up 70 cents. So. If you were long, you had off it last night, because now it's up a little bit. But we'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, North Bay Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom, Ricky on the board. SP futures up 7, NASDAQ futures down 24. We have individual stocks which are taking the Dow up. United Health is up 27. It was up 30. And the rumor that Warren Buffett might be taking taking a shot in there. We got Caterpillar down 350. But mostly everything in the Dow is up. Dow's had a huge run-up lately, more so than any of the rest of this stuff. Over in Europe, these guys are up a little bit earlier. DAX is down 1. Call that flat. FTSE down 12.1%. Last time we looked, they were up 12, but they're still not doing anything. CAC around up 43.5, so I wouldn't say they're down over there. I'd say they're doing nothing. Nikkei up 729, a new record. We got to get Sheena East down here, all-time high. We got maybe on Tuesday we'll get her on here and do a little singing. 43,378. Maybe we won't be on a high by Tuesday. We have the Hang Seng up down 249, which is a full 1%. That's interesting. With the Shanghai going the other way, up 30, that's 0.9%. So. Kind of we don't know where we're going over in Europe or Asia, but we're going there fast. Bonds unchanged, 4.30. Interest rates have been up huge the last 2 days. Bund up 5 basis points, 2.75. I'm gonna have to ask Carl after break. What does their inventory look like when they bought a lot of their bonds at negative interest rates? I gotta believe they marked those to market, not so hot. Oil down another 41 cents, 63.60. Brent down 30 cents, 66.54. Natural gas up 7 cents, 2.91. Gold, which is up $1.30, 33.84, was over 3,400 and pulled back yesterday. Silver down 20 cents, 37.87. Foreign exchange, dollar's getting weaker again. The pound is almost 117. I mean the euro, sorry, 116.91, and the British pound is 135.61. It might be, 136. The dollar got strong, and now it's going the other way. Crypto up 537. Bitcoin touches record, but then it came back down. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:40 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 70 degrees right now, with a high of 89 degrees. Sun in areas of high clouds today, so that will be partly cloudy, warm, and humid, with a low of 76 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 80 degrees right now, with a high of 104. Partly sunny and very warm. A passing shower this morning, followed by a thunderstorm in spots this afternoon. Tonight, mainly clear, with a low of 83 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's 24 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 38 minutes. Eisenhower from Wolf, 29 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 18 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 29 minutes. MLB, yesterday the Cubs lose to Blue Jays 2-1, and Diamondbacks beat Rockies 8-2. Today we got White Sox at Royals, 7:10 p.m., Pirates at Cubs, 1:20 p.m., and Diamondbacks at Rockies at 7:40 p.m. Lastly, NFL preseason week 2 this Saturday. Tomorrow we have Cardinals at Broncos, 8:30 p.m., and this Sunday, Bills at Bears, 7 p.m. Back to you guys.
Carl, I was, we're talking a little about the PPI stuff. I've said a few times this week, and again, as much as you try and be accurate, I kind of warned as best I can that given the fact that the CPI, even if it's done legitimately, seems to have, I mean, this is a 40-year observation, seems to have this lag to it that I don't quite understand, but it seems like there's a lag to it. Always has been, was in the 70s, it seems like it does now. So the people who could crow that don't worry, the tariffs aren't affecting anything, give it a couple months.
You're a little early on that.
And the other one is, I think the tariffs are going to have an effect. I've seen the M2 number. You and I, go back and forth on that. Matter of fact, our friend Hal has actually done an extension using the weeklies, yeah. And he's got it way worse than I thought it even was. So which also is like a 6-month lag. All this stuff kind of points to September, October, maybe November. But I did not, I'll be honest, I did not even think of, I was focused on the goods side of this.
And now the service was
causing the problem. Where's that coming from, and how did I not see it? How do we not talk about it?
Oh, well,
maybe we have talked about
it. But. Well, Chief, we have talked about it.
How do you get a feel for that one?
Well, on the PPI side, it's very hard to do in advance, okay? But what you can see is where the deltas are in the MTS, okay? Because healthcare, of course, is 90% of service, right? I mean, there's goods involved in it. Prescription drugs, hello.
But services to me, all right, I should be able to do this. Define the service. I would guess auto mechanics, lawyers, that kind of thing.
Doctors,
where is it? Okay, doctor.
Physicians.
But how does anybody even know what their guy's charged anymore?
The thing is, though, is that this is. But now, where I thought it was fascinating, is that where it is showing up is in trade, transportation, warehousing as well, which is a really bad place for it. All right, that is not where you're.
Does that have something to do with the spike in diesel versus gas? You think or no?
No, because that's a cost issue.
Okay.
Okay, but the reason I say that that's an especially bad place is that you would not expect all of that to be the case in the general sense, because TTE is that's goods, right? If it's fuel, it's goods.
Okay, I get it.
Okay. And yet we're not seeing it in the fuel numbers, all right, which is in the CPI, right? So, I mean, the data is there.
Is it getting your grass cut? Is it a carpenter? Is it all that stuff supposed to be in there?
Well, it's Yeah, well, that's exactly it. Is that so? Less on the final demand services side, total was plus 1.1 on the, now this is on the month. Okay,
it's a total, yeah, it's a lot.
That's a bad number.
What's that, 13.5% on the year?
Well, even worse though, trade was 2% on the month.
What does that mean? What's the definition of that one?
So trade. All right. So you have total. You have trade as a subset. Transportation and warehousing as a subset, and then everything else. All right, so the way they break it out on final demand service is kind of weird.
All right, so
trade.
As you know, and I know you like to kick me every time I do this. You know, I'm a ground up kind of guy. What in the transportation, it doesn't include the cost of the truck. It doesn't include the cost of the gasoline. Where is the service part? The cost of the driver.
Well, it's the service part is it, well, it indirectly it can include the cost of the truck and the gasoline, in that it's the charge for transportation and warehousing.
Okay, so okay. If I call a guy up and it was for a truckload of crap a year ago, it was $1,000, and now the guy wants $1,100. The whole mess is up 10%.
Correct. The whole mess is up 10%, and then you say, "Well, I want, you know, 10,000 square feet of warehouse." Okay, and that price is up it was $100, now it's $110, you know, for whatever period of time. Well, that's 10%. All right. So transportation.
Okay, so buried in there is all the other stuff, just the way they look at it.
Right. Okay. Because it's the service of providing it. Okay?
Okay.
So it's the billable piece. The thing is, and then trade is the service of arranging the transportation and, you know, and all the other stuff. I mean, that's the, you know, all the overhead,
okay,
like all the overhead pieces. But these are services provided. So like when I ran MCS, we had essentially a little warehouse place. It was actually one of them self store joints, but I mean, that's a warehouse, right?
Yeah.
All right. And cause we had property that wouldn't fit in our office that we had to keep. And so that was, you know, yeah. But if that charge went up when the contract renewal time came, well, you know, that would show up in warehousing. So, but the thing is that trade, transportation, warehousing are up huge. And then, but then the bad news is that everything else, X that, okay, because, you know, you could look at that and say, well, you know, that's a one-off. That's people trying to beat tariffs. There's only so many trucks on the road. If you know, it's supply and demand, right? You have a lot of demand to move crap.
Is rail prices in there as well?
Rail's in there as transportation.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but the really, really ugly part of that number is that X trade, transportation, warehousing was up 07. That's everything else.
Yeah.
Right.
What did you think of the kind of an aside, I don't know why I'm thinking about it. What do you think of the conversation I had yesterday with Lou regarding Gruden?
Gruden.
The guy suing the NFL, the coach.
Oh, I didn't get that. I wasn't listening to that.
Well, you know, as you know, I like to talk about the different levels that we talk on the show. And,
right.
And Lou and I were talking about, he's saying, well, Gruden, he managed to get a Supreme Court opinion or ruling out of Nevada to take it out of arbitration and put it back in the courts.
Oh.
And he went through a whole routine about how courts are different. It's hard to get discovery out of arbitration. They're not powerful enough. And how there's a gazillion emails here, and the ones that came out of there were for Gruden, right? And then how he's probably going to be easily able to prove that because he was sort of against some of the stuff the commissioner did, that they only put his emails out there. Now he wants to see all the rest.
Right.
And of course, the NFL probably wants no part of that, right? So,
you think?
Yeah, but the point is Lou's talking about what Gruden's going to do and this guy's going to do, and I kept asking him, and we're not being crazy, but ask him, you know, Lou, what you're talking about, no regular citizen could do anything like this,
right?
I mean, one of our guys has been on the show, and he's helps us out attorney wise. He went to a thing from our high school, and there's guys that are up to $850 an hour, $1,000, and the merger and acquisition guys are $1,000. Tell me, I mean, it's the thing I think when we do the show, and I think you recognize it as well, it's the same subject.
Right.
The people I see walking to the train that are nowhere near. I would say, if I ran out there with my Howard Cosell little tape recorder, I'm going to say 1 in 10 of them even have a doctor. And the only way they're going to go is if they are mortally ill. And that's not the way we wanted to do this 25 years ago. And I'm going to say the legal system is absolutely out of bounds for 80% of the population.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. When you, the goal, you know, you were asking like, you know, well, where's all the pharma stuff? I said, and as I pointed out, and this was true in the 1990s, all right? Because after I sold MCS, I did it just on my own, not being paid by anybody, but I did some lobbying work in D.C., okay, on some subjects that I cared about personally. So, you know, you get in your car, you drive out there, you get a hotel, and you make some phone calls, and you set up some appointments, and you go pound some shoe leather on the pavement. Right? I mean, that's how you do this.
But you didn't have the... you couldn't get in the health club and all the other stuff. What do you think? Oh, speaking of which...
Well, I couldn't get in the health club.
What do you think about Wayne saying that two or three of the biggest lobbyists in that industry were former senators or reps?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. That's absolutely true. But the thing is that, you know, what I was successful in getting into a few congressional offices, you know, and you get, you know, 20 minutes with one of the aides, or, you know, maybe if you're lucky, you get 5 with the actual rep or the senator.
I got to believe the security was right behind you with a gun.
Well, actually, you know what, back then, you could, there, other than a metal detector, you could walk into any of the House or Senate office buildings.
I think in 90-something, 92, when I was first on the board, I think we had a reception in the Capitol. I just walked right in. I don't think there was a metal detector.
Yeah, this was before 9/11. You could walk right up through the front door. You didn't have to go through that whole back thing that they built.
No, we went through a side door because that's where our reception was.
Right.
When I say a side door, on one of the ends, it was an end door for the wings.
Yeah. No, there was no problem with access to the Capitol prior to 9/11, or any of the office buildings. Not at all. You walk right in.
You think we'll ever be that way again, or we're too crazy?
You know, we should. I'll tell you what, Chief. Here's the thing. I think a lot of what's wrong, and a lot of why this stuff goes on, is that we have allowed people at all levels of government, from school board members to police officers, to, you know, your example with the, you know, the immigration guys running around with face masks on and tack vests and whatever have you. It all the way to congressmen, and especially congress people. We've allowed all these people to get to become, to feel, which by the way is not true, but we've allowed them to feel that they have this aura around them that makes them unaccountable to the public at large.
Well, it's...
And you know, and you
know
can
what? See where it came from, though, Carl. The guys at the softball game that got shot up the one night?
Oh, I understand that. But here's the thing, okay? The British tried to do the exact same thing in the colonies 250 years ago, all right? Billeting people in people's houses,
yeah.
You know, stuff like this, right? And ultimately, the bottom line is always the same, which is that when the people decide they've had enough of this, if you take all the police, every police force in the United States, it's about 1 million individuals, roughly. All right, that's every sworn officer. State, federal, local, the whole shooting match.
Well, if you start talking about private security and TSA, I mean, they really start to add up.
Yeah, take all... No, I'm taking all of the sworn officers, okay, that have actual law enforcement power. About 1 million. There's 330 million Americans. If the people of this country decide they've had enough of this crap, it stops in a day, because there is absolutely no way that when you're at a 330-to-1 numerical disadvantage, you win. I don't care what you've got. Makes no difference.
Well, we have a lot of weird stuff, and we're kind of wandering off the topic.
Well,
you know, my whole thing about the protection is nobody's ever protected me. And the Federal Reserve here, I don't know how much they spent after 9/11 to harden that building.
Oh, yeah.
And all it does is cause somebody to shoot somebody across the street. I mean, if you can't protect everybody, you really can't protect anybody.
Well, no. The whole idea is that, well, you know, we're your betters. We deserve it. You don't. And my argument is, and this is why I push back on this whole thing that's going on in D.C., where they're, you know, where they're going in there cracking down on this. Okay, do I like the idea of essentially, you know, a takeover, if you will? Well, not really, until I look at the fact that they've arrested 100 felons, most of them with firearms. By the way, a felon in possession of a firearm is a separate crime. Okay. And part of the problem there is that the argument from the other side of the aisle, and the biggest gain in the problem within the D.C. area in particular, is that, oh, you can carjack if you're 16 and you won't go to jail. Well, guess what? That was a deliberate decision by the law enforcement people and the government within the District of Columbia. My perspective on this is, if I'm old enough to pull a gun on somebody and force them out of their car, steal their car, I'm old enough to go to prison for doing it.
My bitch on this whole thing, and, you know, we got a few minutes, but my bitch on this whole thing is that neither side, as you know, I'll argue with you and Kevin and Jan on this to my last day. But if you put three of the city people in here, I'm going to be even more of a terrier against them, because I think maybe because my family was involved in this and whatever, and I've been in some of the schools, and I just remember stuff, Carl, and you do too. That's why, you know, I love having you. Yeah. There is a massive problem here that either side has very, very short-sightedly tries to address.
Oh, absolutely.
And like what Wayne was talking about yesterday, he said you could read the Kerner report today, and it absolutely tells the truth.
Yeah.
And how we've gone about on a lot of policies, making a permanent underclass. And it's not just blacks going anywhere else. There's this permanent underclass that have no help doing anything anywhere. And I listened years ago, and I forget the guy.
Well, it makes people a lot of money.
Well, the guy who was the sheriff, I knew the guy, Sheehan. This was funny. He and Tom Dart, who's not a sheriff, they were members up at the Buckingham before COVID, right? When Buckingham was the club. It wasn't the club, but it was a private little club. It was not the Betrayers. The mayor was in there. The mayor didn't even have a bodyguard in a place. I mean, it was just everybody knew everybody. So Sheehan would always corral me because he was a ref. He was a big-time ref before he was a sheriff, right? Because big Southside family, real nice guy. And he'd corral me because I'm from Notre Dame, and he'd bullshit with me for half hour, and he'd go, ah! Looks like I had no time to work out. I'm heading for the steam. So I managed to cut the workout piece out of his morning workout. So he was heading to the steam and shower. Anyway, but the sheriff before him, forget his name, he was on one of those Saturday morning shows that I used to go to Saturday morning, take my mom to breakfast. I wish I could do it one more time, but she's gone. And he was on there talking about, well, the average IQ, was it IQ or education? It was either... The average education of people in the jail, especially since we let people out of the mental places.
The funny farms, yeah.
Is sixth grade.
Yeah.
The 60% of the people can read and write.
Right.
He said, so when we let them out, he goes, I don't know about you, but I'm not surprised we get them back.
Well, neither am I. But, you know, but here's the thing about that, though, Chief. You know, as I've talked about many times, in the 1990s, all right, the majority of high school graduates in the city of Chicago who would come in and apply for a job at my company, just a straight entry-level line job, all right, pretty basic stuff, answering customer service questions, things like that. Something I could train you to do in a day if you've got a reasonable brain in your head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're not even...
Yeah. I mean, we're not talking about skilled positions here, all right? But it's a wage. Right.
Okay. We only got a minute or two. Where I'm going with this is, on one side is throw everybody in jail. The other side, let everybody out, because that's not doing anybody any good. Well, obviously, there's a massive amount of work to do in the middle. Okay.
Right. There is, but the problem is that you've created for the last 25, 30 years, and I don't know how much further back when it comes.
Well, it goes further back.
Well, of course it does, but I don't know how far. Okay.
I think it goes back to when Kerner wrote the report. That was in the 60s.
Well, okay.
There was a reason why there was all these riots and Martin Luther King got shot, right?
Well, yeah, but here's the thing. You cannot tell. You cannot hand out credentials that don't mean what they say.
You're never getting an argument on that. My point is if we don't figure out, okay, and I wonder, everybody's going to say, Chief, you're an idiot. There's no cost. There's no way we can get the money to have some kind of a trade school in the jail. I mean, I'm going to say one of my best friends is an attorney. He's at 26th Street. He knows more about the jail than anybody. He knows the different areas you want to be in and that. And he has an 800 number where these guys can call him. He goes, there's people in there that you're never going to turn around.
Right.
But he goes, but there's a lot of people that could be easily turned around, and there's some that may be kind of tough. But the idea is there needs to be a trade school, all this stuff. If I put a list together, and I'm not the social worker to do this, maybe you and Kevin could probably help better than me because he's closer to younger people. We put a list together, and it's going to cost X. And everybody's going to go, this chief's an idiot. We don't have X. What I'm saying is if we'd have done that for 30 years, I'll bet the cost of all the X's, 30 times X, is way less than what we're doing right now.
Oh, yeah. But you know what? Here's the other thing, though. You have to take away the capacity to just say, F it, I'm just going to sit on the public dole.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Because here's the thing. Everyone says, well, you know, who's going to roof houses if we get rid of all the illegals? Well, the answer is you've got, probably 100,000 people, most of them black, but not all of them,
but
in Chicago alone, who certainly can roof a house. And by the way, you could teach them how to do it in a couple of weeks.
Okay. One of the things I said the other day, and we'll continue this on Tuesday, is the nature of the homeless and the people.
There's a huge difference between homeless people.
I'm talking about the people who everybody's on some kind of wacko drug, and it's not like it was.
Oh no, well,
it's not like they're drunk like they were 40 years ago.
Oh no, well, but drunk is still a serious drug.
By the way,
the garage entrance at True Prue is down on Lower Wacker. I saw them every single day.
I don't want to get into a thing about nationalities
Well, that didn't
background.
Have any.
But I would say this: if you were to say, and I guess we'll end the show on this horrible note, if you were to say, I'm going to pull into a neighborhood with a bus and say, $30 an hour, we're going to go clean a park. You could drive all you wanted in Lincoln Park, and all the entitled kids on their cell phone, you're not going to get anybody on that bus. If you go to Inglewood or one of these other places where the drug traffic, why should I work for $30 when the drug guy's making more? You pull into a Hispanic neighborhood, you better bring two buses.
Well, yeah.
There's no comparison in this city between people's willingness to work and the different groups of people I'm talking about.
Well, but that's because I can sit there and get an EBT card filled up and then go.
No, it isn't. It's because there's not a lazy bone in half of these people's body. The guy who works in the building, the one guy left, his son is now helping him.
Chief, I'm talking about on the margin, okay? I see it here. People who are clearly quite capable of working are not. They're paying for all their stuff with an EBT card in a grocery store, and they walk out and they get a Cadillac Escalade.
We got a dish, but it's close to me, but I stopped for ice the other day early in the morning on the way to work because an ice maker wasn't working in the office. I see some young African-American guy. Well, actually, I don't know how old he was. He might have been older. He clearly, Carl, the guy's 3 months of therapy, and he's maybe in his 30s. Three months of therapy before the guy could pick up paper in the street. I don't know what he was at.
Plenty of those guys are out there around here, too.
I know. Yeah. All right, bud. What do you got going for the weekend? Anything's going to be hot like down there like here or what?
This is this neutral ENSO thing. It's kind of rare for it to be that way in the summer, but this is what we're dealing with.
Boy, it's hot up
there. By the way, if this goes on through into the winter months, expect cold and snowy in the Midwest, including Chicago. If you want an analog to it, think about like 79.
I just got new tires with the snowflake on them. I should be right.
Well, I'm just saying, you're talking about record.
You're saying I need a plow too.
I'm saying you might be looking at these 2 foot snowstorms that have put city people out of office and stuff like that.
Oh God! One of these days, I'll give you the history of that. It was interesting. S&P futures down up 6. NASDAQ futures down 31. Dow way up, mostly because of United Health.
That's, oh my God, what a load of BS.
Oh yeah. Well, that's Buffett, right?
And by the way, three different hedge fund managers piled in on the back of that yesterday on CNBC.
Oh yeah. So, all right, yeah. All right, Ricky, nice job. Back on Monday, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.